Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 557. And we've got ourselves a bonus episode on a Friday. We haven't done a Friday bonus episode in ages, right? Okay, here's the story on this. So the year, but in 2022, as well as a Films of the Year podcast, we did a TV Shows of the Year podcast. Now, in 2023, I had so many guests in December and in the new year. We had Emerald Fennell, we had Loki, Josh Weller, William Oldroyd, Rosie Marcel, Thomas Turgoose, and then we kicked the year off with Joel Edgerton, Samuel T. Herring from Future Islands, Andrew Haig. It's just been hectic. So we didn't have time to do TV Shows of the Year, and we decided we weren't going to. But then as soon as I told John and Joel of the Dream Factory podcast, who came on to help me with TV Shows of the Year, that we weren't doing it this year, all I could think about was my TV Shows of the Year. So here we are, 2 months into 2024, to do the TV Shows of the Year 2023. I'm joined once again by Joel Grove and John Harris of the Dream Factory podcast. And we kind of went over our TV Shows of the Year, and it was an absolute joy. I reckon there's going to be some that you missed or overlooked. There's going to be some that you agree with and love. And there's going to be some that you want to shout towards me and towards the Dream Factory lads. A Dream Factory, if you don't know, is one of the best podcasts out there. It's out every week. It's amazing. They describe what the podcast is in the episode. So let's get into it. In fact, I went on Dream Factory just a few weeks ago. We recorded it all in one night, but it came out a couple of weeks back. So yeah, let's get into it. Episode, I mean, we shouldn't wait any longer. I've made you wait several months into the new year before covering last year. So let's just go. This is episode 557 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with John and Joel of the Dream Factory podcast discussing our TV Shows of the Year 2023. Right, I'm here today with John Harris and Joel Grove of the Dream Factory podcast. How are you both?
Woo!
Wow, yeah, okay, I can be a woo as well. I'm feeling pretty good.
I like
good.
It.
Good, yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to have you both back. And listeners will be aware that this is a very late TV Shows of the Year 2023. But because I had this backlog of Joel Edgerton and Samuel T. Herring and all these, I thought I'm not going to be able to fit in a TV Shows of the Year. And then as soon as I committed to not doing a TV Shows of the Year, all I could think of was TV Shows of the Year. And again, you guys, I often feel I have a commitment to John to do TV Shows of the Year because I think there's a lot of nerdy Marvel stuff that we both enjoy and you don't, Joel. So it's to give him an outlet for some of this stuff. But yeah, how have you both been?
Good, thank you. Yeah, I would say I definitely had a real appetite for nerdy stuff. And John has got a staying power with those series that is like remarkable. Like if John turned his hand to an endurance sport, he would be like the world's greatest ultra marathoner. There is no series that Disney can put out that he won't watch start to finish. It is absolutely incredible. You know, like if he'd committed to learning another language or playing the piano, he'd be one of the greats. It's really impressive. I watched all of those first few series, you know, yeah. WandaVision, I'm still pretty into The Mandalorian, but yeah, John doesn't care what it is. If it's got that Disney watermark in the top left-hand corner, he's watching it.
That Marvel fanfare.
How picky are you on the star? Is it stars? Is that what's the kind of more adult stuff on Disney? What's it called?
Yeah, stars.
Yeah, stars, I think.
Stars, yeah, yeah. It's stars, isn't it? Are you as avid on that, John?
I've watched some Stars content, but I can't say I've watched it all.
Because there's a Stars series I watched that I don't know if I enjoyed it or not. I've put it on my list because I got to the end of it, and I'm not sure if it was just a John-type resilience of I've started it, it's got good people in, or if I was really into it. But it's made the list because of that, but yeah.
I think I might have the same show, but I'm worried that if it's not that show and you're like, no, I thought that was genuinely brilliant from start to end, regardless. So now I'm scared to say
it. It might be the same show. Well, should we start with that? As we're going to be going back and forth on shows. John, what are you thinking?
Is it Murder at the End of the World?
It is. It is. And it was a weird one because I recommended it to people and then I continued watching. It was one of them where I was like, am I just watching this to complete it? Because it's kind of a murder mystery. So they're the ultimate, oh, I have to get to the end because...
For sure.
It's that. But I think I really enjoyed it. And I think everyone in it is fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an odd one. After it was finished, I didn't think about it an awful lot, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think week to week, and there was definitely like a bit between like episode 3 and 4 where I was like, this is just... excellent. And and I don't think it's not excellent. And it's not even that the reveal of the murder is like incredibly unsatisfying. I think it's a pretty satisfying ending. But I think you're right. It's just, I think in this conversation, I think that it's fair to say that some of this stuff might be so obvious that we don't even actually talk about it that much. But there is some of the best telly that's happened in decades in the last year.
100%. I think there's 3 shows in a row, I think, that had an episode that everyone was like, that's going to be the episode of the year. And then another show came out and there was another, no, that's going to be the... Do you know what I mean? It felt like you almost forgot these amazing episodes because of all the other ones. But yeah.
For sure.
I think the thing with Murder at the End of the World, though, as well, was I was a huge fan of the OA. So I went into Murder at the End of the World with a lot of trust in the people making it because I thought OA was so, at the time, or for its time, it felt so clever and so... groundbreaking, and it was the first show that I saw that would have a 20-minute episode and then a 70-minute episode, and just there's a famous episode in it where the opening titles only come in like 30 minutes into the episode, so there's 30 minutes that were all pre-credits, a kind of thing, or pre-titles. So I think because of being such a fan of that, I went in maybe with more faith to Murder at the End of the World than I might have. And I'm glad I pushed through, but I wonder if it wasn't made by that team, would I have bailed at some point?
Can you give me a little 2-liner on what the show is? I've not seen it. I'm not really aware of it.
Well, a super genius billionaire has a party for a load of what he thinks are the world's greatest thinkers, whether they be artists, scientists, you know, whatever else. And at that dinner party, someone dies, and you're then like, "Oh, who did this? Why did they do this? Why?" Yeah,
it's a good hook.
Yeah,
and again, this is a great show, and I really don't like. We're going to talk about brilliant shows, and I don't want it to be all negative. There is a character in the first episode whose job it is just to have to like act like he's naturally explaining who every other person on the trip is, and I felt so bad for that actor's performance. Is basically like, wait a second, you're the guy who wrote that book about this thing, and I was just it must be so hard to do, to be the exposition guy in that situation.
It literally is. They should have got exposition into his name somewhere. Manuel Exposito would be perfect. But well, Joel, would you like to pick a show? I don't want to make that your pick, John, because I've kind of forced your hand there. So we can...
Thank you.
We'll go Joel and then to you, and then I'll throw one in and we'll go around like that. But yeah.
So there's definitely going to be quite a lot of crossover here, right? So I think probably the big two for me, we'll get to. I'm going to swerve those for now and go for one that it might not be on your guys' list, but it may well be. I think probably still my favourite show of the last few years, and maybe my favourite show of last year, is I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, the sketch show on Netflix. It's into 3 series now. And like, I just think there's been no let up in the quality of sketches and sort of the originality of sketches in that show. I think it hits a part of my brain, whichever bit of my brain receives humor, it hits it so perfectly. Like it feels so perfectly attuned to my sense of humor in the same way that I felt when I first watched Limmy's sketch show and shows like that. It does something for me. I think it's absolutely brilliant. It has varying lengths in terms of episodes. Sometimes there's kind of quick fire sketches. Sometimes like there'll be an 8-minute sketch in a 14-minute episode of that show.
It's
so brilliant. The sketches just get given the room that they need to have. And I guess the most famous one from series 3, and maybe the best sketch in the show, is they're on a dating show. Oh, no, so you've got a different favourite sketch.
Going for the smoking cruder.
But there's also the dating reality show.
Yeah.
And the setup is, it's like The Bachelor or something. This woman's about to pick someone to leave the dating show. She's got sort of several potential suitors, and Tim Robinson's one of them. And she says, look, the problem with you, Tim, is that you're just obsessed with this zip line. So they all live in this big house, and there's a swimming pool, and there's a zip line that goes down into the pool. And then it just, you just see all this footage of him just on the zip line over and over again. And he's clearly just there for the zip line. And it's, oh, that's a hilarious bit, right? It's such a good sketch. And I watched it again today. And what's so funny about that sketch is that they're quite far into the show. Like, it, this isn't, he's not the first person to be eliminated from this dating show. Yeah. Like, he's clearly been there for weeks and weeks and weeks riding this zip line. And it's now he's getting voted off. It's just, it's so good. And yeah, the smoking crooner as well is so funny.
It's the first show in as long as I can remember that me and my mates all got together to watch it when this new series dropped. Because it is one that you can just binge them all in one night, really, because they're quite short episodes. So because we'd all watched, because I swear series one and two appeared on Netflix together, or at least I just maybe hadn't heard of it. I maybe heard of it on series two. So I'd watched all of them multiple times and everyone had watched them kind of in their own time. And this was the first one that was like, right, the new series are out. Let's just binge them all. And it's just, yeah, it's so funny. He's just masterful. Have you watched? He's on another show on Netflix. Can't remember the name of it. It's called something like it's just called Characters, I think. And it's a different comedian each episode.
Yeah.
And it preceded this. And it's him. It's essentially a warm up for I Think You Should Leave. And
yeah.
It's fantastic as well.
There's that show, he did that show Detroiters as well, which is one of those it's really hard to get in the UK. I've watched a few bits and pieces from Detroit. He's just, yeah, like I say, there's just something about his style that...
My main recommend is under the it's really hard to get in the UK, which is really awkward because I'm very much pro supporting the arts, blah, 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 blah. But we'll get to that. But yeah, I love those
is this when we cut to the ad for NordVPN? Or does that...
I love it. John, would you like to add anything to that or go into your first choice?
I mean, I basically co-sign that. I think it's absolutely brilliant. It's the length of the episodes as well. It means that you can... I know that it's not a competition, but it is nice to be able to sort of tick a show off your list in an evening. And that is well within that. Right, I'm going to start with a technicality because we recorded the 2022 episode in November. Mm-hmm. And in December, I Hate Susie 2 came out.
Yes.
Which is written by Lucy Prebble and Billy Piper. And there was only three episodes and it was released over that Christmas period, which I think was potentially to the detriment of it in terms of its coverage and stuff, because it came out at sort of this limbo period where people aren't really covering telly in the same way. And, you know, last year's awards, it wasn't really sort of praised as much as it should have, but it's absolutely brilliant. It's sort of a study in anxiety. It's three of the sort of most anxiety-inducing, sort of tense pieces of TV I've ever seen. For those who haven't seen it, it's maybe not semi-autobiographical, but there's definitely elements from Billy Piper's actual life that made its way into this show. It is about in inverted commas, sort of washed-up former celebrity who, in the first one, she has a sex tape scandal. And in the second one, second series, which is only three episodes, she's trying to sort of get her life back together. And she goes on to a sort of Dancing with the Stars, Strictly Come Dancing style TV show competition.
Amazing performance from Blake Harrison as an ex-footballer on this dancing show. So good.
It really is. It's one of those ones where you know, I think the guys who played the in-betweeners, you know, are probably happy to have been the cast of an iconic television show. So that's probably more than enough. But I do feel like, I feel a bit sorry for him in a way, because I think he's known as the sort of idiot comedy guy when actually he's clearly a brilliant actor generally.
Blake won an award on the stage last year as well. And just speaking of the stage, I went to see Lucy Prebble's The Effect. The writer of I Hate Susie, and she writes on Succession, which will likely come up. she had a play called The Effect with Taylor Russell and Papa Essayadu, and it's the best stage show I've ever seen. They've just announced that they're going to be doing it in New York next year, but it's astounding. And again, I think Lucy Prebble is one of these names that we're going to be hearing more and more from. And I completely agree. I think I Hate Susie series one and series two were massively overlooked.
Yeah. I agree.
Really good show.
I think, Lucy Prebble is going to be one of those names where it's like just an instant watch if she's involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, as we've said, there's going to be a lot of crossover and we've got a lot on our lists, but there's one I want to go for just because we've talked about Overlooked and Top Boy wrapped up in 2023. And I think it is criminal that Kano has never really been up for BAFTAs and awards. Jasmine Jobson as well. I think those two in particular, their performances in Top Boy throughout season after season are absolutely astounding. And you don't want to jump to the racism thing, but I don't know why that show isn't getting, doesn't get more attention and more praise, because the way it's directed is amazing. The writing tends to be amazing. And so much of the acting is just absolutely astounding. Yet you never hear it mentioned in awards circles. And I wonder if it's because it is made for a younger audience.
Yeah.
And maybe, even if we're not going to go on the racism card, but it's certainly made for a younger audience and maybe gets overlooked by the type of people who are putting up these awards things. And yeah,
Kano is absolutely phenomenal. He's such a brilliant actor. And I wonder if, is there like a snobbery around, I don't know, like you're talking about the people that run award shows, and he is, to my mind, like, is he first and foremost a rapper, and does that hold him back maybe in being acknowledged as being like a genuinely
weird,
brilliant actor? I find it fascinating because he's so good. He's so good in Top Boy.
I'm excited to see what's ahead for him, because as I said, all he was in for so long is Top Boy. Yet as I said, he doesn't, you have rappers who act and they play a gangster really well. The nuances of Sully's character and the journey he's gone on throughout that series, that isn't just a rapper acting. That's just, he's an amazing actor. And I think it's really bad that, as I said, he's never, I wonder if it's because he's not in that world, he's not got someone who's putting him forward for stuff and pushing his name out there and all that kind of thing, because the reality is he's more, in another world. But I think it's mad how overlooked it is, because I think it's a good show.
People haven't really talked about it this year. Did the move to Netflix, do you think that helped or hindered it at all? Or
it certainly helped, like nationwide size kind of thing. Like it's such a respected show. 90% of the time, you'll see American rappers or singers or whatever else doing British accents. They will be referencing food, and they will be referencing everything they've learned from Top Boy. Mm. So yeah, I think it definitely spread things out there. But yeah, it's an odd one. It's hard to it's hard to know why it gets overlooked, because it's so British as well. It's like BAFTAs in particular, it should be up for everything because it's so homegrown, internationally huge. But yeah, not a peep.
Completely agree. Let's hope he gets acknowledged more for future stuff.
Yeah,
as he is. Yeah, sure. He's seriously talented. Sort of annoyingly talented, really, if we're going to be honest about it. That's what we're not saying.
I had him on the podcast, and afterwards he was asking me like advice on how to get acting gigs, to get stuff done. I'm like, you're so much, you should be so much further ahead than me. You've been doing this longer, and you're better. To be blunt, you're better than me. Like, how are you asking me for advice on getting things across the line and all that? So yeah, insanely talented lad. Joel, what would you like to bring up next?
What should I bring up next? Should I do one of the big ones? Take a bullet and do one of the really big ones. Okay, match of the day. No, let's do, what should we do? Should we do The Last of Us?
Yeah. I mean, joking aside, it was in 2023 that we had the match of the day during the Lineker walkout.
Yes, we did.
And there was a match of the day with no commentary.
Yeah,
no,
it was.
So we can genuinely talk about match of the day in the TV shows of the year.
Because
that was madness to see people, that support of Lineker.
Absolutely. I loved that. I thought it was so interesting. Yeah, the walkout. Yeah, that was brilliant. I mean, I don't know
which one you're going for.
Yeah, let's do the Last of Us.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good, isn't it?
Amazing. It almost feels like damning it with faint praise a little bit to say it's the best ever video game adaptation, because I think it was so far beyond that. And I think the audience was so much more than an audience that were, you know, familiar with it as a video game. Yeah, brilliant. What I think is a real testament to that show is it would have been a phenomenal series with Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey as the series arc. But also within that series, there is the episode with Nick Offerman and Murray Bartlett that is one of the greatest episodes of TV ever.
Which is the lowest rated episode on IMDb because of homophobes. It's public vote, it's the lowest rated. Like on Rotten Tomato and things like that, on the actual critics vote, it's the highest. Yeah, it's one of the highest rated episodes of TV ever, but because of idiots in America.
Wow.
Yeah. But an episode.
That episode is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. I didn't, completely unexpected. I'd played the game, and that's a kind of a, they use quite a lot of license. There's quite a departure from the way it's told in the game, which was the way to do it, 100%. And yeah, I just, like, I absolutely adored that episode. It was completely devastating and completely amazing. And like I say, just within this series, like, just completely complemented the series, but it just stands alone as like its own
little story.
True masterpiece. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that's what they really nailed, was stepping away from the game, but at the same time paying absolute respect to the game. Like, the buzz I got a few times when they'd do something that is playable tactics, if you know what
yeah,
I mean.
Like in the
museum bit, the first time they're in the museum where they just kind of move and turn around, it's like, that's how you play that's the tactics to win the game. And you put it in there. There's so much in there.
There's even bits where they like move bookcases in the way that you would move.
Yeah.
You have to move a bookcase in that video game to get through a window or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's so much respect paid to it, but then also knowing when to go down this road more, explore more than the game did. And excitement over series two, because they've added Caitlin Dever, who I think is one of the best actors around at the moment.
Yeah.
One of my favourite podcast guests, because it gave me, I think I messaged John after I recorded it, saying, this has got one of my favourite ever distraction pieces moments, because she's chatting away and she's like, and at that point we were living in LA because my dad was the voice of Barney, and we'd move over here. And then she talked for about 4 minutes and I had to just nod and then say, right, excuse me, can we go back to your dad was the voice of Barney, please? And she was like, oh shit, yeah. So it's so normal to her, but to get to rewind back to that was amazing. But yeah, I'm excited for all of it, right? It's, and just what a show, just to please it. Yeah, the rareness. So we've said the best computer game adaptation, but just one of the best adaptations when it comes to pleasing the hardcore fans and not alienating the completely new audience. Like, that's so rare in comic book stuff. Either you appeal to the masses and piss off all the comic book fans, or the other way around. I can't think of many things that have appealed to... Guardians of the Galaxy, I guess, is the only thing that comes to mind as a... It really pleased the nerds and people who'd never heard of it were happy. But yeah, what a show.
These two examples aren't from the video game, but I know that it comes from the DNA of the video game. There's incredible world building. And when I was thinking back on it, it's the two prologues to the first two episodes. They're not relevant to the show. Well, they are relevant to the show because it's world building, but they're not relevant to those episodes at all. But they're so brilliant and chilling. So the first one is like a 1970s sort of talk show. And they
John Hannah's
sort of,
there, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
right?
John Hannah.
Yeah.
Is sort of planting the seeds. They're just discussing the idea of like, oh, you know, how a virus could sort of spread like fungus. And it's done in a really chilling way. And the second episode starts with basically an infected being discovered in Jakarta, and a professor and her reaction to that infected being discovered is so chilling and so brilliant. And it just drags you straight into that universe at the beginning of those two episodes. And it's so such clever storytelling.
I think it's also, again, I've talked about this a lot on the podcast in the past, but I also think it's a really motivational story for writers and stuff, because the creator of this TV show, Craig Mazin, his last show was Chernobyl. So you'd be like, yep, makes sense. Amazing. Prior to that, The Hangover 2 and 3. And it's just mind-blowing. It shows that, again, that persistence and that being good at your craft and finding your voice, it's just, coolest shit.
It's so good, yeah.
And a little podcast exclusive here, but a couple of days ago, Craig Mazin messaged me to say he'd just played Bella Ramsey my music and she's loving it. So I was like, Bella Ramsey is aware of who I am. I'll take that.
That's so cool.
Absolute madness. John, what would you like to go for next?
Let's do another one of the obvious ones. So Succession wrapped up in 2023. It's one of those ones where, so the Emmys happened at time of recording relatively recently. I mean, still relatively recently at time of release.
Yeah.
And the Succession is so good that it sort of almost took the air out of the room to the point where there's almost like you feel like there were some snubs, just because, well, obviously Succession was going to win everything. So the performances, as has been through the whole show, the performances are absolutely incredible. And much like this episode 3 of The Last of Us, I think it's episode 4 in this case of the series of Succession, which is called Connor's Wedding.
Connor's Wedding.
Directed by former guest on Distraction Pieces,
Mark Mylod.
And it's so well directed. I've heard interviews with him since explaining how they did it, and they sort of did it like a play, and it really feels like that. There's so many sort of long takes and cameras following people in and out of rooms. Most shows, understandably, will denote a tragedy in a very obvious way. Oh, you know, this part, you know, they build up that tension intentionally, but this is much more sort of human and realistic, and it sort of just happens, and then it's chaos in such a brilliant and beautiful way. And it's such an amazing depiction of just sort of how people react to this sort of news. And, you know, and it might not seem like normal. It might, some people act really weirdly and some people act like exactly how you'd expect them, but it's just brilliant. And it's also really funny. And it's really, I think they wrapped it up amazingly. Just, it's been, you know, for the last however many years, it's just been the sort of go-to television that I'm so excited. Me and Joel will message each other every week, just being like, have you seen it yet? It's that sort of telly.
It was so good that there was a lot of, I read a few articles in America that were worried about HBO, because in the same month, Succession ended and Barry ended. And Barry's another show that didn't really get that big over here, but it's astounding. And they both absolutely nailed the landing, which is so rare. They both had final seasons and final episodes that were just perfect. And a lot of people were kind of saying, what is HBO going to do now? Like, what's going to be... Like, these have been long-running series. It's not like kind of just a mini series or whatever else, and they were both absolutely sound. How confusing is it when a long running series ends and everyone's kind of happy about how it? Like, it's so rare these days. There's such an urge to hate on how it ended because you've invested all this time into it. And as said, I'm not going to bang on too much about Barry, but both of those, Barry and Succession, were both ones that everyone was like, that's fucking great, isn't it? they really got that right.
And I didn't really know how the Succession was going to continue after. What's sort of the policy here with spoilers? Because John was being very, very, very tactful,
beautifully tactful. I mean, it's the biggest show of recent years. It's let's. I mean, there's going to be a spoiler coming up, right, Joel?
Yeah, there's a spoiler coming up. I mean, I'm pretty sure a UK. One of the newspapers in the UK ran a front page obituary for Logan Roy. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I don't know how much of a spoiler we're breaking here. I actually, after episode 4, Connor's Wedding When He Dies, it took me a long time to finish the series. Like I didn't come back the next week and the week after and the week after. And as John is saying, we would message each other every week. John was actually, it got to the point of nagging me, being like, why haven't you watched next episode? I found that episode, it was so brilliant. I found it so completely devastating and such an unbelievably accurate depiction of sort of the madness and the quiet and the insanity around when you lose someone, when you get that, you know, when that phone call happens. And I just thought, I honestly just thought, I don't even know how they end. I don't know how the series ends here. I don't know how we pick it up in the next episode. And I was away from it for a little while because I thought it was almost like the show had ended for me then. I thought it was so perfect, and this like totemic character within the show had passed. And then obviously you finish the series and you realize that like, actually it's a brilliant narrative device because we need all of the attention on the kids, and the show is called Succession, right? And we need to resolve or reach some sort of conclusion with the succession plan, and it plays perfectly. But yeah, I found that episode might be like the most affecting telly that I've ever watched, I think.
Yeah. As someone who write scripts and have scripts in development at the moment, it made me embarrassed as a writer because, as you say, him dying when he died makes so much sense, but I didn't see it. Everyone just assumed that's how the show ends. And then him dying midway through the last season is like, as soon as it happened, it's like, well, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was such a shock. It's like, that's why they're such fucking good writers.
So good.
It is the right thing and it's obvious.
It just feels like one of those... It's those shows where like everyone is firing on all cylinders at all times, like the direction, the completely script writing, agree. Every single member of cast, even the sort of the day players, everyone is just giving career best performances. And Nicholas Britell on the soundtrack as well. I just think everyone is, it's one of those shows where just everyone is playing together and just at the top of their game.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, I'm going to throw one in and I'm going to keep with HBO. And this is one I'm recommending specifically to Joel because you're about to get on a plane. And the only reason I know about this is my brother had a flight to and from Malaysia. And on the way out there weren't any films he fancied. And you know they'll often have a few episodes of a series, particularly HBO stuff. And they had a documentary series called 100 Foot Wave. And I never heard of it. He raved about it. I still didn't get around to watching it for ages because it's about big wave surfing. And I was like, that doesn't really interest me. He finally got us watching it. Me and my brother go around my dad's every Thursday night and watch some TV and cook some food. So we like a series. And when my brother was away, it was Ted Lasso. Me and my dad got through a Ted Lasso. But it became 100 Foot Wave. And it became the hardest thing in the world to hold off until Thursdays to watch. And we ended up doing two episodes each week. It's about big wave surfing and a guy called Garrett, who basically invented it. And it's mad because this documentary series, I don't know if it's ever happened, but this documentary series was started following Garrett and the sport, basically at the invention of the sport.
Oh, wow.
So big wave surfing is where you tow out on a jet ski instead of just paddle out and you go out to where the really big waves are, and the jet ski, you're being pulled along, it will drop you on a wave, you let go and the jet ski goes off and you ride these big waves. And it's astounding because, I mean, the characters just all happen to be just absolutely amazing and the most watchable people in the world. But you're also watching a sport evolve and technology evolve. So it starts off with obviously cameras on the shore all the time and zoomed in as much as they can and getting these shots. And then at some point along the way, drone cameras start to appear and you're getting these and GoPros and all sorts of other stuff. So you get to watch this sport evolve with these particular characters. And there's this one lad called Cotty, who's a plumber from Bath. I think he's from Bath or Bristol. And he went over, because it's all based around this place in Portugal that someone who'd lived there their whole life just took a picture of this particular shore and sent it to this guy, Garrett, and said, I think we might have the biggest waves, but it's not a surfing area, it's not a surfing beach. By the end of the first series, it's one of the most travelled to surfing beaches in the world. Like, people come over for all these competitions, people come to watch. And then, in series two, it kind of grows and grows and grows. So you're kind of, in a way, you're watching the evolution of a sport. In another way, you're watching, like, surely one of the most powerful photos taken in recent times, because this guy just took a photo and sent it to this one guy, and it's changed the economy of a whole area, because it's now, as I said, they have these huge events on. It's this big location now. It's called Nazaré in Portugal. And it's just absolutely astounding. The visuals are amazing because you're watching man play with nature. I was going to say battle nature, but it's playing with nature. It's just being a silly goose on something that could kill you with great ease. But you're also getting all these characters and everything else. So I can't recommend 100 Foot Wave enough. And series two was out this year, and series three is on its way.
Oh, definitely watch that. I think the beauty about documentaries around extreme sports is that I think quite often you have to be a certain type of character to engage, like to participate in extreme sports, right? And that lends itself so beautifully to documentaries because you do have this incredible cast all the time. You know, if you think about the people that are in like Free Solo, and there's that amazing skateboard documentary, is it All This Mayhem, I think it's called?
Yeah.
It's really fantastic. Like, you're just always following really interesting characters because they are doing things that are, I guess, outside the norm or, you know, interesting. Or I haven't actually watched it yet, but I keep getting recommended. Is it Deepest Breath on Netflix as well, which is about the free diving?
Yeah. The beautiful thing here with these characters, though, is something I've not really seen in any sports before, is it really feels like they're not, like they all love each other and they're not competitive and things like that. Like, because obviously when a big wave comes, if you're a team, one of you's driving and one of you gets to get the wave. So even there, you'd think there'd be a bit of jealousy, kind of, if this person breaks the world record for the wave and you're like, I was out that day as well. If I'd been on the other end, I could have got that wave. But there's none of that. And then even between the different teams, there's people who are all there on the same day and one person breaks the world record. And they're basically, obviously, all aiming to get the 100-foot wave because no one's ever ridden or there's no recorded riding of a 100-foot wave. But everyone in it is like, you should have seen what Justine did that day. It was absolutely amazing. It's like, Man, there's no jealousy. It's a beautiful thing. But yeah, Joel,
I'll definitely watch.
What would you like to throw forward?
What would I like to throw forward? Let's go for Silo, which was on Apple TV. I think it was pretty overlooked. It's like a massive budget sci-fi show on Apple, and it's about Rebecca Ferguson's character, who is she works in the police force of a giant silo. There's just a giant underground silo that exists.
And she's an engineer initially, isn't she?
She's an engineer. You're completely right. She's an engineer, and she gets promoted into the police force. And there is this giant underground silo. Nobody's left the silo for generations and generations, and they're all told that outside the Earth has been. Well, you're not really sure, but it's unlivable conditions. Like there's been some sort of apocalyptic event, and so you're being kept safe in this silo. And there is, like you say, she's an engineer, so she's worked. There's a hierarchy throughout the silo, so. As you'd expect, the people at the top of society live towards the top of the silo. And as you get down to the bottom, your engineers, it's like a class system, stratified system throughout the silo. I loved it. I thought it was really excellent. The cast is great. I'm only really saying it here so that more people watch it, so that more of it keeps getting made.
It looks amazing as well.
It looks incredible.
Like it was a proper big budget so Apple type show.
Common's amazing in it.
Yeah.
Love Common in there. It's like the secret police enforcer. He's so good. And ended on a brilliant sort of end of season one cliffhanger that will be absolutely... I'm not actually sure if season two is confirmed. I think it might be. Mm. But it feels like it would be one of those that would go down in the ages of like cancelled show series one ending kind of situations, you know? But yeah, I really loved it. I don't know how much more there is to say about it really, but it has almost like a steampunky, cyberpunky kind of feel to the design of the silo. Yeah, just really good sci-fi show.
I love those concepts that, again, it's what I thought was amazing about Snowpiercer is the simplicity of, society. Here's society in one shrunk down thing. And what I liked about Silo, and I've not finished it, I stopped and forgot about it. So it's a weird one. I'm kind of halfway through. I got previews of it because Rebecca was going to be coming on the podcast and then that didn't happen. And as these things happen sometimes, you get distracted by a million other shows. I never came back to it, but I need to come back to it. But what I like about it is it's years on, so it's not this pristine,
beautiful thing. Yeah.
Essentially, what is their world is starting to break down, is starting to rust, and you have to decide, do we stay trying to live in here? Do we explore outside? And
there's one sort of viewing platform to the outside world.
Yeah.
And the whole arc of the series is you trying to figure out if that's legit.
Yeah.
If that window looks out on an apocalyptic world or if it's...
Because early on, they set the premise that if you want to...
Yeah.
Like you can choose to leave.
Yeah. If you break the rules, like if you break the rules,
you get exiled. And then they tend to go out there and die horrible deaths. But it's this mystery of,
what's happening out there.
Yeah. I need to continue that. That was good shit.
Definitely. Yeah. You should. Yeah. Love Silo.
And it's based on a series of books, so the cliffhanger is not going to be like sort of unsatisfyingly sort of solved. They know where they're going with this.
There'll be loads more to come, hopefully. John, what would you like to bring up next?
So towards the end of the year, this brought me the most joy. I'm not sure if it's technically, if it's sort of the most acclaimed thing, but Scott Pilgrim Takes Off on Netflix, which was the animated series that is sort of, it's in an anime style. It's based on Scott Pilgrim, but it's also not. It's got the entire cast, every single person who was in the Scott Pilgrim film directed by Edgar Wright reprises their character role.
Amazing.
But by the end of the first episode, it's clear that it's very different from the film. So it's not like a sequel. It's not like a prequel. It is a different thing with the same cast. So you could watch it without having seen the film. But if you've seen the film, it sort of adds something to it. It's really funny. It's really inventive. I was just really surprised by it. I think even though God knows how old Scott Pilgrim actually is, I felt quite a weird sense of nostalgia watching it, sort of revisiting however 10 years ago now, whenever that film would have come out. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I've not watched it and I don't know why, because I love Scott Pilgrim.
I'm in exactly the same boat. I remember it coming out and thinking, I definitely need to watch that. I love Scott Pilgrim. They've got the cast together. It sounds amazing. That is now number one on my... After 100 Foot Wave, that is number one on my list of shows to watch.
It's one of those... I see lots of like sort of behind the scenes stuff and I hear in interviews with the cast that the Scott Pilgrim guys just really... Everyone in that cast really got on. It felt like college for them all, and you see interviews with Chris Evans where he'd be jealous anytime he sort of heard that other people were on set doing scenes and he wasn't there because he just sort of missed them all. And they apparently famously have an email thread, which shows how long ago this was filmed, but they've still got an email thread that they regularly will email each other on, all of the cast of this the film.
I love it.
Yeah, it's just a great recommendation.
Is it like a one and done series, or will
yeah,
it be
I don't.
More?
It definitely doesn't like end on a cliffhanger or anything.
Because
like
they're
that.
From a series of comic books as well, yeah, now, aren't yeah. they? So there's probably the material there if they chose to. But
what's interesting is that it's this weird thing where there's three different Scott Pilgrims. There's the comics, there's the film, and there's now this TV show, which are all the same thing, but also simultaneously of like incredibly independent of one another. And that's it's sort of unique in media, as far as I can sort of think, where something is like that, where it is the same creative people in the case of the film and the TV show, the same cast, but it's not the same thing, which I think is really interesting.
I love it. I need to get it watched. I've got two anime shows I want to recommend, so I may as well put them together, right, as we're in a little animated section. But one of them, the first one, is on Netflix, and it's a show called Vinland Saga, which, again, seems to have been overlooked a lot. It's won loads of awards in Japan, and it's a Viking anime show, and it's just absolutely astounding. It's all based on a lot of true history of when the Vikings came to the UK. But series two, I watched both series this year, but series two came out this year, and it absolutely astounded me because it did something I've never seen a TV show do or want to do. So the first season, it's Vikings invading England, essentially, and it's got all these amazing characters, all these amazing fight sequences, these really unique different Vikings and warriors, these amazing scenes, these amazing character arcs of early on there's a young kid whose dad gets killed, and it's following his story is the full first series, and you go through years and years of him having revenge in his mind. But yeah, it's all about war and pillaging and conquering. And series two is essentially about PTSD from war and pillaging and foraging. PTSD and farming, essentially, the bulk of series two. Obviously, things pick up at points, but the bulk of series two is one of the characters having to deal with the fact that he spent so much of his life in a war zone and having to deal with trying to farm in the medieval times and how hard it is to prepare land, to strip land, to clear land, and then to, seasons and all these other things. And it blew my mind. I'd heard that series two was very different, and it's the reason I didn't watch it for a long time, because I thought, no, I love series one, I don't want it to be different. But no one had said how it was different. And again, you still get a lot of good characters in there and violence appears, but just as a choice, it blew my mind that you'd have this show that was a huge hit because it's an action show, and the next series would be, you know, all that action that has consequences, it has effects, and blew my mind. And it's on Netflix. It's a big, big recommend. Easy to be put off because I think it's 22 episodes each series, but they're 20-minute episodes. Okay. So again, it is actually a shorter series if you're looking at hour-long kind of things. Yeah. The other one I want to mention is hard to find in the UK, and it's a show called Scavenger's Reign, and it was on HBO Max in America, and it's another one. I've never seen anything like it. It's about a spaceship basically crashes on an alien planet, but just the way they approach alien life forms, alien organisms, I've never seen anything like it. I think when Alien happened, that was how we informed most future TV and film on what aliens are. Whereas this really goes off how flowers work, how nature works, and then making these small tweaks and changes. So there's so much in it that just for the biology that they come up with, it's so amazingly watchable. But you do have questions of the validity of AI and robots, survivors, what is warranted to do to survive, what the priority should be in surviving on an alien planet, because a load of these survivors have landed on different parts of the planet kind of thing, and they're trying to scavenge and get back. But
oh, nice.
Honestly, it's astounding. It's, yeah, it's, and it's one that, as we were saying, I think it was, I mean, spoiler for the listener, we've essentially recorded three podcasts this evening. And I think there was a, it was a conversation that me and Joel had before John arrived for the first podcast. But it's one of those things that seem to be huge in America and gets so much praise and love, yet hasn't found a platform over here yet at all. Even though loads of HBO stuff comes on Sky Atlantic or Now TV or whatever else. So I really hope it comes over and I really hope we get more of it, because it was, yeah, just truly mind-boggling. Everyone that I've recommended to who's got round to watching it has not known what to say afterwards, because it's not like anything. I've never seen a representation of alien life form in this way. It's so, or one of the reviews, I think it was in The Guardian, said it was like David Attenborough has made a sci-fi anime. And it's like you're watching one of his Earth films, but it happens to be an alien planet. It's mad.
Well, I think we, and I'm sure, look, there are loads of like anime fans and stuff who will be like, you know, welcome, you know, to the club. You're like 20 years late or whatever.
Yeah, but it does
feel like we are at a really good point in animation where big companies are investing in sort of animated stuff for adults. So you've got like the ones we just described. Netflix has also got Blue Eye Samurai that's had rave reviews, and Amazon with Invincible is on my long list. I think Invincible's brilliant. And yeah, it seems like a good time.
And the casts it's attracting, the voice cast, the US voice cast of The Boy and the Heron, where it's like Florence Pugh, Christian Bale, Willem Dafoe, all these amazing people. And this show, Scavenger's Reign, has got Wunmi Masaku, who I think is a really great actor. He's in Loki, really good in Loki as one of the time kind of wardens as such. Yeah, it's cool that they're getting... Scavenger's Reign is an American production, so the original voice cast is American, similar to Blue-Eyed Samurai, where it's an anime style, but it's an American production with, yeah, great voice acting and that. So yeah, some good stuff, man.
Nice. I would do a quick, while we're in anime alley, I would do a very quick shout out for an animated series that I haven't finished yet, but I'm really, really enjoying, and it's filling sort of the BoJack Horseman void. There's a show on Netflix called Carol and the End of the World. And the concept is there is a giant thing in space heading for planet Earth, and it's going to wipe out planet Earth and we're all going to cease to exist. But it's taking a very long time. It's going to be here in like 18 months, 2 years. And so people on Earth have embraced hedonism, and they are seeking their passions in life and fulfilling desires and dreams and things they'd always wanted to. And it's about this woman, Carol, who is just completely stuck with this like sense of ennui and a feeling that she doesn't really want to do any of these things. Like she, like her parents have got into just like being nature, like they're naked all the time. Her parents are constantly naked. Her sister's off like paragliding and learning a language and all over the world. And she's stuck, like I think stuck without any sense of routine or any semblance of, what to do, just completely paralyzed by the idea that you can do anything, right? It's like the paralysis of choice. Yeah. And one day she sees a woman in like office attire, just in like a business suit, and she follows her. And this woman goes to this abandoned building, gets in a lift, and then emerges at an office. And there's essentially like 100, 200 people almost cosplaying the existence of an accountancy firm. And she goes in and she joins and starts working at this maybe non-existent business that you can't really work out what's going on there. Oh, it's such a brilliant idea, and it's so true. Like if you had all sense of routine removed from you, how would you know how to spend your time? And it has that BoJack, what am I doing existential kind of feel to it. I'm really enjoying it, so that'd be a recommendation from me.
What a great time spent in Anime Alley.
I had a good time.
What a lovely time. Joel, do you want to throw another one in? I guess we've probably got one more each, have we, as time is going on? One more, two more? I don't know.
One more. Yeah, I can. If it's one more, I will probably go with Dave. Series 3 came out in 2023. It is the show about the rapper Lil Dicky's trials and tribulations as he tries to become a successful rapper. And it is absolutely brilliant. The level of cameos that he's reached in Series 3.
Yeah, it's got ridiculous, right? I've not watched it. I watched the first series and loved it, and for some reason haven't continued. But yeah, loads of people have been raving about
it. It's phenomenal. I think it's FX's most successful ever show, like most watched ever show. Series 3, he is now famous, and it means that there are episodes where he goes to the Met Gala, and they have managed to recreate the feeling of being at the Met Gala and the and the people that would be there. The final episode is essentially a hostage film where him and Brad Pitt are taken hostage in his house for an hour and 15 minutes. It's absolutely remarkable. And my favorite episodes are probably, there's one where he's making a music video about himself, and it's like three or four generations of his life, so younger versions of him, and he's filming a music video about them. And there's another one where they're on tour and they get stuck in this house in the middle of nowhere, and there's a tornado, and they're stuck with a very, very sort of conservative Christian family. And it's all the goings and trappings of, like, you know, as a Raptor bus with its entourage, and they're all stuck in this house. I think it's so brilliant. I think they do really ambitious things with each episode. I absolutely love it. I think he's just an unbelievable performer. This is the first writing and acting he's done for TV.
Yeah.
And he's so excellent. I love it. I think it's such a great show.
I need to get on this. That and Reservation Dogs are two that I've watched one series of, thought they were amazing, stopped watching despite the fact everyone says it gets better and better every series. Yeah. It's absolutely astounding. I'm like, haven't gone back to it for some unknown reason.
So yeah, Dave would be my other pick.
I love
such
it.
A brilliant show. Have you watched it, John?
No, like Pip, I've started it, but I haven't continued. It's on iPlayer, right, in the UK? No,
weirdly, I mean, I don't know how, well, if you want to get into the weeds of where to watch Dave, it was on iPlayer, but now
it's... Let's get into it.
Let's talk distribution. It was on iPlayer for series one, and now I think it's all on Disney. I think maybe... Okay. Did Disney buy Hulu? I don't know, but I think Hulu stuff's on Disney now, maybe.
Well, what's that series? There's a series on Netflix that my mum had a nightmare with, because it was a show that was cancelled in America and Netflix saved it. But Netflix over here only have it from where they've saved it. So series 1 to 4, what's it called? It's like it's a plane crash. Is it some... Yeah, I'm sure it's something about a plane crash or...
Okay.
I mean, the listeners will be screaming.
Yeah,
now.
They will.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, listener.
But yeah, it was bizarre that my mum was like, give this a look. And then she was like, hang on, I can't...
Yeah.
I can't keep watching it. So I had to go back and forth all over the place. I'm going to jump in and throw an honourable mention here because it's got a similar situation. One of my shows of the year also had arguably the worst name in recent TV history. So one of my favourite shows of all time is Justified. A Timothy Oliphant is fantastic. Mm-hmm. That was another one that years on, it finished about 10 years ago, and they've just decided... I was thinking of it when John was saying about Scott Pilgrim. Years later, they've gone, let's get everyone back together and do another series. But instead of calling it Justified Series 8 or whatever it is, they called it Justified City Primeval.
Okay.
For no reason whatsoever. It's fucking awful. So I was, because me and my brother were big Justified fans, so we were really sceptical. But then we watched it and it was amazing. All the characters just felt so good. The new characters fitted perfectly. And it's one of them, because it was on coming on to Disney, Disney also bought the entire back catalogue of it.
Nice.
So it's one of them. It's a tough recommendation because it's like, yeah, it's really good. There's 9 series to get through. It's like, it's a long one to catch up on, but it was really good and really fun. But still, Justified City Primeval.
It sounds like a knockoff PlayStation 1 game.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. But John, it's your turn next. I've stolen a spot.
One that like surprised me because it was brilliant and I was slightly apprehensive was on last year's one of these, we talked about The Boys series 2 or 3, whatever it was. And this year was Gen V came out.
I'm so glad I haven't got this on my list and it so should be.
It was absolutely brilliant. It was the extending of a universe in which the original premise is sort of taking the mick out of comic books made me anxious because I thought, well, there's a lack of self-awareness to sort of expand a universe in a show that is sort of taking the mick out of how all comics expand their universes and stuff. But I thought they did it absolutely brilliantly. Eric Kripke, who's like the showrunner for both of the shows, did an amazing job. It feels completely like its own thing. By the end of the first episode, you're in love with all the characters. You're on board, but at the same time, it's so within that universe, like in really fun and sort of not necessarily in intrusive ways, like characters will come in or you'll see them on the telly or like, you know, they'll literally, there'll be literal statues of characters from The Boys.
Yeah.
And I just think it's done so well, and it's made me very excited for the next series of The Boys. And they've announced The Boys Mexico as well, I believe. So,
amazing.
You know, bring them on.
I completely agree. I tuned into it because I hadn't heard particularly any hype, and I was like, but it's The Boys, and yeah. Everyone loves The Boys. So I thought it must be rubbish. And I watched the first episode, was like, this is absolutely astounding. Like, the superpowers that they come up with are ridiculous, and the problems that they bring psychologically and just socially and everything is amazing. It's so essentially it's The Boys but at college.
Yeah.
It's the teen version of The Boys. It's in The Boys universe, but they're all at college. And yeah, completely agree. Absolutely fantastic show. And it got me really hyped for that. Like, it leads into the next series of The Boys really well. And then yeah, again, it's if it keeps just going back and forth, I think we've got a hell of a bit of world building going on there.
Yeah, yeah. If we get to have this between the series of The Boys, that's great. Yeah.
I don't want to sort of commit to saying it's the best one ever, but it's probably in the top three puppet massacres I've ever seen on telly.
Oh man, a hell of a puppet massacre. Yeah, great show. I don't know why it isn't on my list. Even though this list has no other form or function, I'm writing it on there because I want it on the record. I don't need this list anymore, but no, that should be on there. Well, I want to kind of round things up then. And again, we've not mentioned Traitors. Are you guys Traitors fans? Because at the moment, where we are now, Traitors is blowing up. But just after we recorded last year, Traitors came out beginning of 2023. Are you Traitors watchers?
I'm not.
Are you reality
you're gonna
TV
be the,
fans in general?
You're about to be the 2,000th person to tell me to watch the Traitors. I know I need
it's really fucking good. Yeah. Really fucking good. Just as reality, it's got that vibe of those early seasons of Big Brother when you're like, this is good TV, but it's also genuinely a good socially, like a fascinating social experiment. It's not just exploitative. It's like, this is really interesting. But yeah, that was one that I was like, how can we not talk about that when that's all anyone seems to be talking about at the moment? Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about the cooking dramas. So Boiling Point and The Bear, because I think both of them, absolutely astounding. The Bear, I loved series one. We talked about it on the last time we did this, I believe. I think series two knocked it out the park. I didn't know if it could, but I think arguably better than the first series. Every cameo or every, you know, new character that pops in is amazing. Yeah, have either of you watched it? Have both of you watched it?
I've watched the second series. Yeah. It's one of those ones where, because the first series, I don't think there's anyone of note. That's incredibly mean. They it was star-making turns. They
to
weren't
us,
famous
like
yet.
Jeremy was big in Shameless in America, but we didn't really get that over here because we had our own Shameless and yeah.
And so when you sort of see that it's got like Will Poulter and Olivia Colman and stuff in the second series, I was worried, that these people are going to stick out like sore thumbs in this show with these like this bunch of characters that you've sort of grown to love. But they're all brilliant. It's all so well done. And so the first series is much more sort of traditionally linear in its storytelling. This one, they give some real sort of diversion. So you've got entire episodes based on what I would say is like a side character in the main show where he goes to Amsterdam to learn to bake with Will Poulter,
so good.
Which is an incredible episode. And people talk about the sort of the Thanksgiving flashback episode, which is it Christmas? I think it's Christmas.
It's Thanksgiving,
flashback.
I think. No, I think it's Thanksgiving. I think you're right.
Which is amazing, but I really love that Amsterdam episode as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's one of those shows where you just, it's one show writer and runner. It's all from one perspective and the confidence that they have in the show is it's so clear and it's so well made.
If that was the third one, you had that Last of Us episode that everyone was like, this is going to be the best episode of TV of the year. And then you had Connor's wedding. And I was like, nope. This is the best episode of TV. And then you add the Thanksgiving. Like, no, this is... So what a year, right? To have so many things that people are like, this is arguably the best of the year. That's fucking great. And then did either of you watch the Boiling Point series?
I haven't watched it, no.
Really I started good. It. I need to finish it.
It's really good. I really enjoyed that straight off the bat, they lose the one-shot thing that the film was so known for. And yeah, I just think all the characters, the way it's shot, it's similar and completely different to The Bear in that it's got that tension, but in a completely different way. Yeah, I think it's worth a watch. And again, it's it's another one that's quite a short series, isn't it? I think it's only four or five episodes.
Yeah.
But yeah, really good stuff. When did cooking become such a hotspot for drama in in TV. It's mad.
The cast in Boiling Point is just absolutely stacked, and it's you know, it's one of those shows again where you just, someone who's not on the screen that much is sort of giving it just an incredible performance. It's really, and I know that was part of the, in inverted commas, trick of Boiling Point. The film is, the one take makes it feel very fly on the wall. It almost sort of feels sort of documentary-esque in the fact that it's in one take. But partly that is just because the performances from the from the actors are just so real.
And I think there's some stars coming out of it. Azuka Hoyle, who's also in Big Boys, which I think Big Boys I talked about last year's episode, but the new series only came out in 2024. She's going to be an absolute superstar. I think Sean Fagan, I think it is, who's in The Kitchen, is amazing. Stephen Ogg in The Kitchen is amazing. Vinette, obviously Stephen Graham, and Hannah Graham. Hannah Walters Graham, Stephen's wife, has one of the most amazing episodes. She's got one of those episodes that you're like, this is her moment kind of thing. And it's just, it's beautiful to see. Anya, I just think it's such a great ensemble that you're going to get so many people coming out of that have big old careers. And that's always
be one
exciting.
Of those, when you watch it, if you like look at the cast in 5 years' time, you're like, bloody hell.
How were they all together in that? It's going to be the band of brothers.
And then in 10 years, we'll get them back for an anime series.
Yes.
That's Boiling Point.
Well, I guess we should wrap things up there. Unless there's any particular honourable mentions you want to just throw in, we don't have to go into great detail on.
A couple of really quick ones, maybe. It's mad that, it's just testament to how good telly's been 2023, that there was I thought a really good series of Black Mirror that we haven't mentioned.
Yeah, haven't mentioned at all.
I thought there were some like classic Black Mirror episodes in there. It was great.
I brought up Papa Sayadu earlier, who's amazing.
He's
one
so
of the best
good.
Episodes. Of
he's
those.
So
oh,
good.
So
as,
great.
As the demon, he's amazing. I also really, really loved Boat Story, which
didn't
was
catch it. Heard really
Daisy
good things
Haggard
about it.
And,
it's on iPlayer, isn't it?
Joseph show. It's on iPlayer. I think it's six episodes in and out, you know, one and done. The whole story is told in that time about two people that find a boat full of cocaine on a small sort of sleepy seaside town in the UK. Loved that. And Jury Duty as well, which I think was last year.
Yeah,
catch that. Really brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
The semi-reality show about a guy who goes to serve jury duty, but everyone else is an actor.
Right. Yes, I heard about that. Yeah.
Really brilliant. Really brilliant. But you can't say too much about that without spoiling show, I don't think, but that's really phenomenal. So they would be my honourable mentions.
John, have you got any honourable mentions?
The only sort of telly thing that I would also like to shout, there wasn't so much of a nerdy corner. Well, there was a nerdy corner, but it wasn't like a traditional, you know, Marvel, Star Wars stuff. So the real standout from that was, I think Loki really stuck the landing if you managed to get to the end of that.
I completely agree.
Really amazing sort of send off. Or is it that character?
Yeah, I completely agree. I had Loki on my list. I had Welcome to Wrexham on my list because I just think it just gets better every season. Slow Horses, everyone raves about it for very good reason.
So good.
It's just great, isn't it? Every character is just so engaging. And a little curveball one here, but over Christmas, again, like my brother recommends all this really, some really highbrow stuff, some stuff you've not heard of. Over Christmas, he said, if you're in a food coma, he said, sling on Prime, pop Reacher on. And I binged both seasons of Reacher and thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm not sure how much I can morally recommend it because I think there's some really questionable stuff. Even though it is a silly world, I think we're celebrating some really bad things being done. but it's thoroughly enjoyable. And that main lad playing him is just
huge.
A joy. He's a big massive. Boy. He's a big old lad. Surely, John, you must have seen him and been thinking Marvel. I saw him and I was like, who is he going to be in the Marvel universe? Because he's fucking huge and he's so good to watch.
Big time. Yeah, he's one of the biggest men I've ever seen.
Massive lad. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyable. Throwaway TV, but thoroughly enjoyable. Is there anything you didn't like this year that people were raving about? I only say this because I've got one.
Wow. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. What's yours?
It's not that I hated it, but I didn't really rate Beef that much.
Oh,
I was really excited about it because everyone was saying it seemed to be one of the first ones in Asia that the day it came out, everyone was like, "Oh my god, this is amazing!" And weirdly, I knew I was cat sitting that weekend, so I'd planned my takeaway, and I was like, I'm going to binge beef, and maybe the situation outdid it.
Maybe
I'd built it up so big that I was like, I can't enjoy this. But yeah, it just didn't.
Yeah, do you know what?
It didn't work for me.
I only watched a couple of episodes of Beef and fell away from it. So maybe I feel subconsciously.
It's like I didn't hate it. Yeah. I persisted because everyone was talking about it. And even by the end, I was like, cool. That was good. Good work, lads.
There was a show that I, again, fell off that I've seen really high up a lot of lists. Mm-hmm. And that's Poker Face.
Right. I enjoyed it, but I can see why. I can see
it. I've seen it in top fives of the year, you know, and I really wanted to love it. I think Natasha Lyonne's amazing. Yeah. The concept's great, but I found a little bit by the end that the conceit was the same in each episode almost. Like it was, because it sort of had to be. And I found it a little bit wearing. And I didn't make it to the end.
The whole thing of it's like a modern Columbo is exciting until you realise, I can't remember the last time I watched an episode of Columbo. Yeah. So this is a really exciting idea. Oh, actually, I don't really like watching Columbo.
Yeah.
So
I get you on it.
I did finish it and I did enjoy it. But as I said, it wasn't on my list here. So it's clearly one that didn't blow me away. John, have you got anything?
I mean, nothing that like was rave reviews that I then proceeded to dislike, but I think it's worth me mentioning as a sort of dyed in the wool Marvel boy with the tattoo fully bought in, that Secret Invasion messed up the landing
completely.
So bad. Like we're talking about Loki sticking the landing. Secret Invasion really messed up that landing and it had so much promise. It's got like
Olivia Coleman, I enjoyed a lot of it. Samuel
L. Jackson, Ben Mendelsohn, like amazing people.
Amelia Clarke.
Yeah.
Loads of really good people in it. And again, there were points of it I was really enjoying it, but I think you're right. It kind of didn't stick the landing at all, which is, a shame.
For sure.
It's good, what a somber note to end on.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dream Factory, where can people listen? Like, what's the plans? Have you got any plans? What's the future hold?
Just more episodes, more stupidity. It's a very silly podcast. If you thought, you know, this is me and Joel in serious mode, if you fancy hearing us in silly mode, Dream Factory, it's a weekly podcast where people send in movie ideas, mostly pun-based, and then Joel and I riff off those for a while and then get distracted by like a shiny penny or something in the corner of the room.
And as I've said time and time again, I'm just a huge fan. I'm so glad it came back and it's so entertaining. Again, partly you guys, partly because you're wonderful listeners just consistently supplying these fucking ridiculous ideas week in, week out. And thoroughly entertaining.
There's lots of people who send us, there's like Twitter accounts that are just people making puns based on movies and stuff. Or there'll be TikTok videos where it's just people reading out a pun and then laughing. And I just think, those guys aren't dedicated to this enough. They need to eke out 25 minutes of content from one bad pun idea. Then they can come back to
it. They need to get into their seventh year of this.
I need to really get into it. Well, I'm glad we've got into our second year of going over the TV shows. And again, it was a bit of a challenge because we've not done it right at the end of the year. As soon as I was trying to put things together, I was like, what did I watch this year? That typical thing, because of the binge culture we live in now, that you're really excited for one weekend and then you forget it. I was sitting there for ages thinking, I don't know if there's any, all I'm watching is The Traitors and Big Boy. They all came out this year. There was nothing before that.
It's exciting, Pip, because we recorded last year's in November. We did 2022's TV in November of 2022. We're doing 2023's TV in almost February of 2024.
Yeah.
Who knows?
When the fuck are we going to do it?
We might record it in April or we might record it in 2026. I can't wait. I can't wait for that WhatsApp message. So
it's going to be beautiful. Well, thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure as ever.
Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you for having us.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was John and Joel. I love doing a little bonus episode every now and then. You know, it's a lovely little treat. Hope you all enjoyed that and hope you agreed with some or all of the shows. And I hope you found out some new shows in there as well. So, I'll be back next week on the Wednesday, back to our regular scheduling, with one of the stars of one of the TV shows I mentioned today. In fact, I've got two of the stars of TV shows mentioned in this episode coming up in the next month. So March contains two stars. One of the people is in two of the shows I mentioned. I'm just realising all of this. You're hearing these realisations live. Yeah. So one of my guests coming up is in two shows that I recommended, and another one's in another show. So there's a lot of excitement to come. And I've got two music-based guests coming up, which I know people get excited about. So March is going to be a hell of a month, I'm telling you. So I guess let's get on with it. We've started it. Let's continue it as we mean to go on. So I will see you next week. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.